From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The House of Representatives debated two articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump on Wednesday in a historic day that would lead to only the third presidential impeachment in U.S. history. 6 hours of debate showed that Republicans generally stuck to a few themes, asserting in the face of plenty of evidence that there was no evidence to impeach Trump, and accusing Democrats of harboring some sort of vendetta against a president they've wanted to impeach from day one of his tenure. The vote came a day after thousands of people in more than 600 rallies around the country protested against Trump and demanded their lawmakers impeach him. My guest is Ben Clements. He is the board chair of Free Speech for People and co-author with Ron Fine and John Boniface of the book The Constitution Demands It, The Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump. Welcome to the program, Ben.
Thank you, Sonali. Good to be here.
So the Republicans have generally, as I said, stuck to this line that there just isn't any evidence to suggest that Trump should be impeached. The Democrats have charged him with the, you know, what the Constitution lays out, high crimes and misdemeanors. The words treason and bribery have been thrown around. He's been called a threat to the national security of the U.S. But to the Republicans, none of that has any basis in fact. How do you respond to this line of attack, if you will?
Well, it's by design a difficult line to respond to because it's so utterly nonsensical and so detached from reality. But I think the reason they're reduced to that is because there is no defense. I mean, the facts are really not in dispute. The basic outline of the impeachable offense was set forth in the original whistleblower complaint, which Donald Trump and his defenders immediately dismissed as being untruthful. And every piece of evidence that has come out since, including the president's own admissions and the White House approved summary of the president's phone call, have all confirmed and added more detail, damning detail and evidence to that original whistleblower complaint. So they're really left to just throw up distractions like there's no evidence without actually responding to the evidence, or the process is unfair without actually explaining how it's unfair. I think that their complete lack of a substantive response demonstrates that they've really given up on their constitutional duty and they are just lapdogs for Donald Trump.
Now, your book, The Constitution Demands It, The Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump, came out a year ago, more than a year ago. There were books that I remember covering, calling for his impeachment the day that he got into office. And the Democrats didn't act on any of this, didn't act on any of the impeachable offenses until the Ukraine story came around about a month or two ago. Republicans have been claiming that Democrats have wanted to impeach Trump from day one. Now, there may be some folks like Rashida Tlaib, who got her seat last year, and Al Green, longtime congressman, who have wanted to impeach him from before the Ukraine scandal. But by and large, has the Democratic Party actually been enthusiastic about impeachment?
Well, it obviously depends on how you define the Democratic Party. But if you define it as the people in power in the Democratic Party, and particularly the power that has the authority to bring impeachment proceedings, that would be the House leadership and primarily Nancy Pelosi. And no, Nancy Pelosi has been an opponent of impeachment for as long as there have been people calling for impeachment. That did not really change until after this overwhelming evidence of a blatant extortion scheme and an effort to enlist Ukraine to interfere in the 2020 election was revealed. Even then, I think it's fair to say that Nancy Pelosi expressed reluctance about it. I think to this day, she's expressed reluctance about it. And there's lots of reason for people to disagree with her about that reluctance. And I'm one of the people that have disagreed completely with her on it. But the notion that the House leadership, that Nancy Pelosi has wanted to impeach him since day one is absurd. And, you know, I would just add to it that the Democrats have had control of the House since the 2018 elections or since shortly thereafter. They've had plenty of time to launch impeachment proceedings, but the leadership at least said, no, we're not going to do that, even though they had completely the power to do it. And they had more than enough evidence to do it. As we outlined in our book, he has been committing impeachable offenses, clear-cut impeachable offenses, since the day he took office and began violating the emoluments clauses.
And in fact, some of Pelosi's words from just months ago saying that impeachment was too divisive came back to haunt her on Wednesday when some Republicans echoed her words. So the Republicans are, you know, fighting tooth and nail. And I'm wondering if you have some comments on just how this process has also played out, because they've been making arguments against the process. They've claimed over and over again that they have not had any chance to be part of the process, that they've been left out of the process, even though while they're saying it, they're literally participating in the process. Also, they are the minority party, and they don't seem to understand that if you want the same rights as the majority party, you have to become a majority party, right?
Well, that's correct. I mean, obviously, the Democrats have the majority of power in the House, and they're entitled to exercise that authority and set the parameters of the impeachment proceedings. However, the Democrats have bent over backwards to make those proceedings as fair as possible. And the notion that the Republicans, the defenders of Trump, haven't had a chance to participate is just utterly unfounded. In fact, what actually happened is they were given the opportunity to call any witness that they felt they needed to call. And the problem for the Republicans was that the witnesses they called actually testified in a manner that hurt Donald Trump. They called several witnesses during the impeachment proceedings in the House, and those witnesses corroborated and amplified the case against Donald Trump with respect to the Ukraine extortion scheme.
Let's also talk about the fact that Trump made a last-ditch effort maybe to either talk Nancy Pelosi out of impeachment on Tuesday night in a six-page rambling letter, or maybe it was his way of yet again capturing a headline and making the case to his base. But he sent this six-page letter, rambling and angry, that was widely denounced. He said he got high marks for it. Again, his standards of reality are completely different from reality. But he also claimed that he wasn't in the least bit worried about impeachment. It seems that he kind of is worried about impeachment. He's been tweeting furiously on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that that the impeachment proceedings is not something that he has welcomed, despite the fact that he claimed that he welcomed the House impeaching him. It's clear that it has thrown him even more off balance, even more unhinged than he usually is. And that's saying something, because he is generally quite unhinged. But this has clearly put him over the edge. I'm not sure it's fair to say that he actually thought that that six-page rambling, confused, and utterly lie-filled rant was going to help him in the House of Representatives. But he obviously felt the need to lash out at the people that are confronting him with his own wrongdoing.
What about the impeachment-related protests that took place Tuesday night? I know that you addressed the gathering that happened in Boston. There were a whopping 600 rallies. And I have to confess, I don't feel like they got enough media coverage given how widespread these protests were. But if you look through the photos of them from city after city, big cities like New York City and, you know, tiny cities you might not have heard of, had hundreds and in some cases thousands and perhaps tens of thousands of people showing up. Give me a sense, if you can, of what took place Tuesday night, the night before this historic impeachment debate and vote.
Sure. And yes, I did take a part in the Boston impeachment rally. And as you note, Sonali, this is one of hundreds and hundreds of rallies taking place simultaneously all across the country. The week before Christmas, a very, very busy week. And yet, despite the fact that it was a very busy week and that in many parts of the country, including here in Boston, the weather was absolutely horrible for being outside at an impeachment rally, these were very well attended. And the energy and the passion of the people that I was with last night in Boston that I've seen on video across the country.
Sorry, can you just repeat that? Can you repeat that, Ben, and say that Tuesday night?
The energy and passion that I have seen Tuesday night with the people in Boston, and I've seen on the videos of rallies around the country, it is extraordinary. The energy level and passion in the people wanting to claim back their democracy, wanting this unlawful, corrupt president to be held accountable, is really quite remarkable. And it's particularly remarkable given that part of Trump's MO is to wear down his opponents. I mean, we patriotic Americans have been marching, have been protesting, have been rallying since his inauguration, since the Women's March. And there has been so much to protest. And that's one of the ways that authoritarian regimes wear people down, is it just is one assault after the other. But the people are still standing up for our Constitution. And that's what we saw Tuesday night. And I think it's also worth noting that there were efforts to get anti-impeachment rallies going, kind of in response to that. And those really didn't come to fruition. So I think it's important to point out that the narrative that Trump and his defenders have tried to put out there, and that to a large extent the mainstream media has gone along with, that impeachment is not exciting people and that it's backfiring and that people are against it, that's just not true. I mean, we have a huge amount of energy behind impeachment. There is not that kind of energy opposing impeachment. And we have at least 50% of the country that not only agrees he should be impeached, but agrees that he should be removed from office. Those are numbers that were barely reached even by the time Richard Nixon resigned from office in the face of possible impeachment and removal.
Right. There were some counter-impeachment rallies on Tuesday night, I understand, where some supporters of Trump gathered, but in almost all cases, as far as I can tell, they were outnumbered by the pro-impeachment folks. And as you said, Trump's strategy is to wear people down, and he has claimed, again, in the face of evidence to the contrary, that his support has surged since the impeachment process began, and that this impeachment was actually going to be really bad for the Democrats. But really, it doesn't matter, does it? If he violated the Constitution, whether or not the public is behind lawmakers have a duty to do what they pledged to do, right? Which I think is why Nancy Pelosi, I think, rightly started her statements on Wednesday, reiterating the oath that lawmakers were asked to cite when they took office.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And again, it comes back to the point that we talked about at the beginning of the show, that this is something that the leadership among the House Democrats did not want. They wanted to avoid impeachment proceedings, and they overlooked, and from my perspective, too generously overlooked violation after violation after violation of the Constitution. And I think what happened with this Ukraine extortion, it brought the violations to such another level, and the evidence was so blatant, and the ongoing corruption and refusal to cooperate in the investigation in the House really, really left her and the rest of the leadership in the House with no choice. Just as a legal, as a constitutional matter, as a matter of conscience, they had no choice but to proceed with impeachment.
Republicans have tried their best to cast Trump as a victim. Trump, of course, has done the same thing. He has compared him, you know, what he's going through to a witch hunt, even invoked the Salem witch trials. And on Wednesday, one Republican lawmaker, Barry Loudermilk, even compared Trump to Jesus Christ in the in terms of, you know, saying that he's been essentially crucified by Democrats. In their world, it seems as though the president is completely innocent. But they keep trying to have both sides of it, don't they, Ben? On the one hand, you hear them say, well, you know, Trump has the right to do what he wants to do. And some of his ardent supporters say that. On the other hand, they say, well, he did nothing wrong. So either he did the thing that Democrats are accusing him of doing, but in their eyes, he's above the law, so it's okay, or he did nothing. But they seem to want to have it both ways.
That's absolutely correct. The lack of any defense on the law or on the facts has put them in the position of having to just make up nonsensical defenses. And the result we get is a series of completely inconsistent defenses, as you say, or non-defenses, inconsistent distractions. The lie that he hasn't done anything wrong, or the outrageous admission to his authoritarian and unconstitutional impulses to say that he's entitled to do whatever he wants. And sadly, I think that that really comes down to the Republican Party position now, is that they believe their president, who, against all the evidence, this is the most anti-Jesus Christ president we have ever seen. There couldn't be two people more opposite in the history of the world than Jesus Christ and Donald Trump. And yet, they compare him to Jesus Christ in yet another effort to say we're not allowed to challenge him. He can do whatever he wants, but because he is essentially a God figure to the Republican Party, nothing can touch him, and they will stand by him no matter what he does.
There's also been this argument around whether or not the impeachment proceedings should be a partisan affair or a legal affair. In the House, Republicans, who are the minority party, have demanded, you know, factual evidence, and then, of course, denounced it when, or even, you know, pretended it didn't exist when they were presented with factual evidence. But in the Senate, which is where this process will go next, after the House vote on impeachment, it's also not clear whether it's supposed to be a partisan or a legal affair. I mean, it sounds on the surface of it like it should be a legal affair, because we have the Supreme Court Chief Justice presiding over the trial, and the Senate actually hosts the trial with the House acting as prosecutors. In that case, senators are supposed to be jurors, but Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has literally spelled out, I am not an impartial juror. That is, those are his words. That's a quote by him, word for word. He has made very clear he is going to be coordinating with the White House so entirely that they're going to be in lockstep. I can't imagine a court case scenario where a juror was openly collaborating with the defendant. So is it that we've just done impeachment so rarely that these details are fuzzy and the Republicans are taking advantage of it?
Well, the details certainly aren't fuzzy enough to justify that kind of abdication of responsibility that Mitch McConnell has shown. In fact, it's quite clear that the senators are required to take an oath to fairly and impartially conduct a Senate trial. So there may be some gray areas about exactly how impeachment proceedings are supposed to be conducted, because it's not spelled out in great detail. But the notion that the Senate Majority Leader, the person who's basically going to be in charge of this proceeding, has not only made up his mind ahead of time, but is going to allow the accused president to dictate the proceedings, demonstrates that he has completely abdicated this constitutional duty. He really should be recused. He should recuse himself from this role and allow someone else to fill it. But he won't do that because he doesn't believe in the Constitution. He believes in defending Donald Trump at all costs. I will say, I think the comparison to a jury trial is a little bit inexact. I don't think there's an expectation in the Constitution that the senators would be in quite the same role as jurors. For one thing, certainly in the case of a president, they're going to have opinions about the president and they're going to know the president. Those are things that would disqualify an ordinary juror from an ordinary criminal case. But that doesn't mean that they don't have a duty to conduct the trial fairly and impartially and in accordance with both the evidence and the law. And there is a large body of law going back to the legislative history of the Constitution itself about what impeachable offenses are. And if you take that body of law and you apply it to the undisputed facts concerning Ukraine. There's no way for a responsible, law-abiding and oath-abiding senator not to find that Donald Trump has committed impeachable offenses.
So it's very likely that the Senate will take up an impeachment trial, possibly the beginning of the year. Acquittal, which is what McConnell wants, or even dismissal of the articles, inevitable? Some have suggested that if you got complete unity from all Democratic senators and turned just a handful of senators from the Republican side, Mitt Romney has said he's openly in favor of impeachment. Susan Collins, who just launched her re-election campaign and who sits on the fence about it, and you know, a couple other senators, is all it might take. You know, the media writing as if the Senate impeachment trial is a done deal and that Trump will emerge from it unscathed. Is that true?
Well, I don't think it's true. I do think that certainly Mitch McConnell is putting it as big a thumb on the scale against doing justice as possible and siding with the president before the proceedings even start. But you're absolutely right that at some point, some of these senators may feel, if not a sense of duty and conscience, a sense of their own political futures, a sense of recognition that the American people are not going to stand for this kind of abdication of their duty and for this kind of cozying up and protecting someone who really has given up on the national interest in favor of his own narrow interests, which is what the president has consistently done, is put his interests, his personal interests, financial and political, above the national interest. And senators that stand by that and protect that and cover up for that, history is certainly not going to look kindly on them, but the voters won't look kindly on them either. And some of these Republican senators are going to have to start thinking about that. We know, as you say, Susan Collins has got to already be thinking about it. She's already got one very unconscionable vote that the voters are likely to punish her for, and she may not want to add another one to that.
You're talking about the Senate confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh for Supreme Court?
Indeed, yes.
So finally, well, some have suggested that Nancy Pelosi's last bit of leverage on the impeachment is withholding the articles, preventing them from going to the Senate for an impeachment trial, and suggested that she might exercise that power until Republican senators assure her and the House that they will carry out a fair process. The Republicans and Trump, to an extent, want this to end as quickly as possible, although Trump has flip-flopped and has, you know, alternately said he wants it to be done with or wants it to be a long drawn out spectacle because he thinks it'll benefit him. But there could be the stink of impeachment hanging over his reelection campaign for many more months if Pelosi potentially chose to withhold the articles of impeachment from once they're voted upon, which, as you and I are speaking, is in the process of happening. She could withhold those for a while and prolong the case. What do you think?
Well, I think she certainly could do that. And I think there are a lot of reasons why it might make sense to do that. One of which is the obvious, that right now we have Mitch McConnell saying that he's not going to treat these proceedings the way the Constitution requires him to treat them. And so that really does undermine the chance of a legitimate trial in the Senate. But the other reason that it might make a lot of sense to do that is there are so many, there's a lot more evidence that could be put together to make the Ukraine case even stronger, as strong as it is already. We all know that Donald Trump has blocked some of the most important witnesses from testifying in the House, and the House has been trying to force them to testify through the courts. So holding on to the articles would allow more time for the House to gather that evidence. But more importantly, from my perspective, it would allow more time for the House to continue their proceedings that they had begun with respect to other impeachable offenses, the most obvious being the obstruction of justice that went on for the course of more than 2 years with respect to the Russian investigation, pre-Mueller and after Mueller was appointed. The House was already in an impeachment investigation of that obstruction of justice before the Ukraine issue broke. And I believe they should expand it to cover his many other impeachable offenses, including the Emoluments Clause violations, including his absolute abuse of the presidency to foment racial discrimination and racial violence and bigotry, as well as several others. So I think there are some real upsides to holding on to those and building the case with respect to these other violations.
Well, Ben, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. What is a good website that you might recommend to our audience to follow the impeachment story?
Sure, thank you. We're updating it regularly on our website at freespeechforpeople.org. And you could also go to impeachment.org.
That's freespeechforpeople.org. Ben, we'll post a link to those websites from our site as well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Ben Clements, board chair of Free Speech for People, co-author with Ron Fine and John Bonifaz of the book The Constitution Demands It, the Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump. We've been discussing the historic House impeachment vote. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify. Ben, is it impeach.org or impeachment.org?